Florian, and today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by the Vice President of Global Football Holdings at Trivella Group, Mr. Matt Jordan. Matt, big warm welcome to the show.
Connor, thank you so much for having me. I followed your podcast for quite some time and admire so many of the guests you've had on. So it's an honor and a privilege to be with you today.
Again, thank you for your kind words. I suppose this is nearly the second podcast we could say we've done, especially after the catch up last month.
No, that was great. Our event that we did in Chicago at the convention with the Association of Sporting Directors was awesome. So I'm happy to be back on with you.
So without further ado, let's commence this one. Matt, as you know, with every episode at the very start, I begin by asking, could you please take us through your earliest football memory?
Well, let's see. My earliest football memory. I would say my earliest football memory was when I was a kid, a young kid. My parents worked, and I would go from school to an after-school program called the YMCA. And there you kind of get, exposed to a bunch of different sports and basically wait for your parents to pick you up after work. And that's really where I learned soccer. And started to really enjoy it. And I remember after my dad picked me up one day from the YMCA, I was all really excited. And I was like, look, let's go back in the backyard and, let's kick the ball a little bit. And so I was challenging him. I said, kick the ball harder, kick the ball harder. So he wasn't didn't come from a soccer background, and he gave it like everything he had. Ball floats over my head over the fence, and it goes into our neighbor's dining room, goes through their window, and goes into their china cabinet and breaks all their dishes. That's a memory that's ingrained in my mind from one of my earliest memories, which was really funny that we joke about nowadays. That was a funny memory of one of my earlier memories in the game. And then I would say, Connor, like some of my earliest exposure to professional soccer was, when I was te a teenager around 16 years old. I played for a youth club called the Colorado Foxes, and very non-traditional to a lot of clubs in America at that time. The top of our structure was of the professional team, the Colorado Foxes in the American Professional Soccer League. And so to pay my dues, I would go and for games, set up billboards and set up the towels in the locker rooms and, the food and, make sure all the guys had all their stuff ready and then and would be ready. I was kind of like the runner in the locker room. And that was such a wonderful experience for me to get exposure to the professional game and, to, be in the locker room after the game when the guys, win a game or, and I think that that was really important for in my formative years, to really inspire me, for a career in football that's now lasted a long time.
It's quite an anecdotal story to begin with, china cabinets and all. But it's interesting how that preceded such a long, illustrious playing career. And what I'm curious to learn a bit more about, and we spoke about this after the ASD conference last month. I mean, obviously, when you took the technical director role at CF Montreal after playing there for such a long time, you mean it was a very, very new role to the game. There's a lot of mystery about it. Just curious how much of that was initiated from the club versus yourself in terms of what I mean. Was it intentional or was it just the next step?
I think like many professional players, I was fortunate to have, a long career that ran into my mid-30s. But every year after 30 years old as a professional player, you're saying to yourself, hey, this could be my last season. This could be my last season. And really what I had done in my career, as I was getting to the latter stages, is I did a couple of things. I got all my coaching licenses because I thought maybe I wanted to go down the path of coaching. And when I was playing for the Colorado Rapids, actually, I was an assistant coach at a university. But I kind of felt like that, it didn't feel like that was my path. The other thing that was always important to me is my education and my background. And so from Clemson University, I graduated with a degree in management and sports management and marketing. And so I always had the vision that I wanted to work in the front office, and that I thought that that would be a great challenge. So really kind of what happened with me early in my career is I had signed a contract to continue playing with Montreal. We had a lot of success at that time. And then we got the bid to join Major League Soccer and as a new franchise. And at that time, the Saputo family, Joey Saputo and the Saputo family, and the sporting director at that time, Nick DeSantis, who was my coach previously, had come to me. They saw that I had some qualities they thought were transferable to working in the front office. And they came to me and they said, "Hey, the job is here and now. And so if you, we would like to offer you this." It was a director of soccer operations, technical director role. "We see you as a great fit in this role, but you basically what that meant was I would have to retire early and kind of rip up my playing contract and transition into the front office." And that was a really difficult decision. But looking back, at that stage of my career, 35, 36 years old, that was a good decision. A challenge that I was really eager to take on. You think in your mind, "Oh, okay, you have this career, with, playing in, different leagues and all these different things, and you have all these experiences. You've been in with the national team and all these different things." You think, "Oh yeah, I'll be good, when I transition into the front office." But really, at that time, that was a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of rolling up your sleeves and really learning on the job how to figure things out. And so that was a tough transition, but a transition that I'm forever appreciative of from the Saputo family, Joey and Nick DeSantis.
Well, it's interesting how you can scaffold that journey too, because obviously you formalized your education, you had the coaching licenses, you had mentors on the on that side of things too. But there's probably nothing, as you alluded to there at the end, Matt, that can actually prepare you for the hot seat itself.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, really, it's so important, in those situations. And I think this is a mistake a lot of former players make, right? Is, you got to get your hands dirty, and you have to really, you have to really learn the ins and outs of, what it's like to manage staff, to manage operating budgets, to make sure the training facility is in order, how do you get, players' ITCs? I remember back in the day, calling the Canadian, we were trying to close a deal for our first signing in Major League Soccer, and there was a bunch of pressure to make a press announcement and do all these different things. And I remember we couldn't get the player's ITC. And at that time, who was in charge of that was also a pharmacist. In Toronto. And so I was like, literally, like I spent the whole day on the phone, going through all the voice prompts and the numbers to try to reach the pharmacist to put pressure on him to, push this ITC through. And so many stories like that of just really, you just really learn that you have to get your hands dirty and learn and have the right mindset, to grow. And so I think that's what I will always be appreciative of that stage of my career when I was making that transition from playing to working in the front office.
It's interesting as well. We spoke about the playing phase. We spoke about the phase now where you roll up your sleeves and get your arms dirty per se. What stage of your career would you call the move to Houston Dynamo up? Because they're in fact moving to an even bigger market in many different areas to work as both GM and VP at the time, Matt.
Yeah, well, I was really fortunate, Connor. I think that we spent almost 8 years in Montreal, and that was really important, from a standpoint of working with different cultures. Montreal is a melting pot. I mean, there's a strong, it's a French province, obviously, so there's a strong French influence, there's a strong Italian influence, Portuguese, French-speaking African influence. It's a real melting pot. It's a real high-pressure market, that, it's very demanding. The ownership was very demanding, wonderful people, but very demanding, you know, and it was about, you know, it was really important for me to have that experience. We had, at that time, we had a middle of the road budget in Major League Soccer, you know, and we were bringing a lot of European players and doing a lot of interesting things. And so then, but at that time I was, you know, I was a technical director. The role that I transitioned to in Houston was as vice president and general manager, was, you know, more overseeing everything, right? Working side by side with our chief business officer report, or our president at that time. I reported to the president, and then our structure changed over time. But basically then transitioning to kind of overseeing, you know, the whole first team. At that time, we were starting a reserve team and in the USL, RGVFC Toros, and then, you know, basically rebuilding our development academy. So, and then really putting structures and processes and departments in place I was the first general manager in the history of the club. And then I think what helped me a lot, Connor, was getting to the point where I had to work. You know, I worked in such a diverse environment in Montreal, then, you know, really shifting to Houston, which is totally different climate, totally different, you know, very Latin city, you know, very, you know, South American, Central American, you know, Mexican influence. Our payroll, our structure was totally different. I was, you know, dealing with, you know, at that time, we had one of the lowest payrolls in Major League Soccer. So I had to really kind of shift my strategy, you know, from the way we had done things in Montreal, and the demands of the ownership group up there to the structures here in Houston when I was in charge there, where I came to work for AEG Anschutz Entertainment Group, who also own the LA Galaxy. But then I had to navigate through my first ownership change. And that really was, you know, it was a great learning process for me.
And obviously you spoke of there, I mean, working in two very different markets, two vastly different cultures within different budgetary constraints. But we go back to it again, but there's obviously nothing that could have prepared you in your own formal education for two such roles. But zooming out and looking at you as a leader, Matt, is there anything that you would have, in hindsight, focused on in your earlier days to develop core skill sets to support you in your role?
Yeah, look, I think... That's a great question. That's a great question. I think when you go in those, you get thrust into those leadership roles for the first time, it's human nature that you have a tendency to want to try to do everything yourself. And I think that was something, especially when you're maybe a little bit under-resourced, you know, compared to your competition. And so I think that that's something that I've evolved over time, Connor, you know, where at that time, you know, I think that it was definitely my tendency to try to do everything myself. But then I learned over time, you know, the operation just, it continues to grow, you know, in organizations. I mean, when I was working in Montreal, you know, at that time we had like 12 full-time staff for the whole football operation department, right? Transitioned it to Houston as we're building all these departments and infrastructure, go from like 30 full-time staff, 25, 30 full-time staff to, you know, at one point 50 plus. So, you know, you really, what I've learned is that, you know, it's really important to put key leaders in key leadership roles that you can trust. You don't micromanage them. You let them do their job. And then, you know, you have very clear goals, KPIs, and objectives that they're held accountable for, right? So that's something I think I've learned a lot. The other thing I learned transitioning into that role is, you know, when you're operating and in charge of a football club, you know, it's coming from every direction all the time, right? You're managing up with the ownership. You're managing, you know, sideways with your senior leadership team you work with. You're managing down with your staff. Yet, you know, it's coming from every direction. And I think there's a quote from John Wooden that I really love. And I really have thought about, and is to be quick, but don't hurry. And I think that's something that really is resonating with me, because, you know, you can get like caught in the hustle bustle. So, you know, and kind of get in the weeds so often, but I really like that idea of, you know, look, you need to execute and you need to, you know, get things done because everything's always time sensitive in professional sports. But how do you do it, but not like rushing and hurrying, right? You know, how do you be quick, be efficient, but don't hurry? And so those are a few things that stand out to me when you ask me that question.
That urgent versus important matrix just gets absolutely blown out the window, doesn't it? But it's something we spoke off air. We spoke about the academy football, and obviously when you're working as GM, right, you're overseeing everything. You're overseeing first team, academy, ops, data science, sports science, you name it. And for me, there's a vast, and this is part of my own, I would say, learning curve maturity. There's a huge difference between knowledge of and knowledge about. And in terms of just being able, as you said there, to decentralize it and give leaders in your own organization a trust and the tools to run and go at it. But for you, in terms of being the main leader, especially now nowadays at Trivella there as VP of Global Football Holdings, how does that balance look like for you, Matt, in terms of balancing the short term with the long term vision?
Yeah, well, I think that is always the challenge in pro sports, right? Because you have the demands of results, you know, day to day, week to week, with the long term strategic planning and the vision. And so to me, I think that organizations that I've always admired do a great job of finding that balance. You know, and I think that is vitally important, you know, and that's in my role with Trivella Group, you know, it's a bit different, right? Because I'm, you know, I work with on a daily basis our leadership at our clubs. Obviously I work with our executive team at Trivella Group, but I also work with our leadership on the ground. So I'm working all the time with our boards, with our CEOs, with our head coaches, our academy directors, right? And so it's, you know, when you're kind of day to day with a club, like you're only focused on that club and the strategic plan, short term, medium term, long term, right? Whereas with my group, it's similar with my role with Trivella Group. It's very similar. I'm still focusing on those same objectives, but it's more with a centralized structure that we're implementing, you know, and that goes, you know, through a lot of different areas. So I'd say that, you know, but that is the challenge in football. And look, you know, football in pro sports is, you know, the intensity of the work is ruthless, right? And it's nonstop. And so I think that it's really important that you never really get too high or too low. And, you know, when things are going great, you know, and everyone's talking, you know, saying so many great things about, you know, the direction things are going, I think it's really important to bring it down a notch, you know, and have that balance and understand that those, you know, that could turn, you know, like that tomorrow. And then when things are going really challenging, you know, same thing, right? Things are never as bad as they may seem when you're going through it in the moment. So I think just that balance of, you know, not being like this as much, but more just, okay, hey, how do we find that balance between the short term, medium term, and long term results, right? And that's where I think leadership really comes into place, especially when you're dealing with, you know, CEOs and head coaches, is okay, hey, how do you help take a step back and be like, cool, that's the challenges we're dealing with right now, but don't forget, this is our strategic plan, and you know, this is, we got to stick to the plan, and yes, we'll course correct along the way. But so those are a few things that I would say to that.
Very interesting. And leaning more into your current role at Trivella, having listened to you before in a previous podcast, you spoke about your role being mainly two things. One being doing diligence on acquisition, then a second point there being building synergies within the overall structure. And for me, it's a fascinating portfolio when you look at it, in terms of you look at the clubs such as Silkeborg, Walsall, Drogheda United, obviously at home in Ireland, plus clubs down Western Africa. Could you speak a bit more to the process there and the rationale behind acquiring such clubs?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, I mean, yeah, you know, my role, as you kind of touched upon, you know, working with an incredibly talented executive team at Trivella Group with the leadership of our managing director, Ben Boycott, who are just incredibly talented executives, great people, is, you know, my role is really, like you said, is we're sourcing new acquisitions, you know, working with the group on due diligence, on, you know, sporting, you know, infrastructure, facilities, business, you know, merging that in with, okay, hey, what did the financial realities look like, you know, with this potential acquisition? So that's kind of that first key thing is that due diligence aspect of things when we're sourcing new clubs. Then when we acquire the club, or the state, you know, along with the stadium or, you know, real estate that is one anchor of our business, is then, okay, how do we put centralized Tribella Group processes in place, you know, from our player recruitment processes to our medical reporting to our individual development plans within our academy to our head coach profiles to our staffing profiles. And then third, roll that into how do we build synergies between our football entities, right? You know, what does player movement look like? What does staff development look like, right? And so really putting on like that centralized Tribella Group hat, but then personalizing it to each market, you know, Connor. And I think that's super important in the multi-club, you know, the evolution of multi-club sports investment space. You know, it's kind of a cool buzzword, right? Oh yeah, you know, we run a multi-club group, right? But it's so much more than that. I mean, you know, you're going into markets where the club means so much into the history and culture of the towns and cities that you're involved with, right? I mean, look, Sickleborg, 108-year-old club. Walsall, 137-year-old club. Drogheda United, 106-year-old club, right? I mean, and so for us, it's really important that we don't look at this as, you know, Ben, our managing director, always says this, and I couldn't agree more. You know, like, we don't look at this as like years, right? It's not like we're looking to get into these situations and turn it over in a couple of years. We really invest, you know, with the thought of decades. And how can we make a meaningful and lasting impact on the communities that we serve as stewards, right? Because you look at that, how old those clubs are, what these clubs mean to these communities, like, you're really stewards of the club. And that's something that I've really developed a huge amount of respect for with my, a lot of my work transitioning into Europe and in a lot of these markets.
Seems to me as though the USP of Tribella is in the how. The what there in terms of the strategic initiatives anyone can speak of, but in terms of the how, you speak of that personalized process, individualized, seems to me to be very much of a collaboration, if at that man.
Yeah, no, I think that's super, super important. And I think that collaboration, you know, your in-market leadership is critical. You know, that collaboration and being a resource and being a resource of support, you know, being willing to have hard discussions, you know, when the challenging moments arise. But I think that what's helped me a lot, Connor, is, you know, my journey of working with so many different cultures, you know, from my time in Montreal and then, you know, my time in Houston and, you know, the different, you know, parts of the world that football has been, I've been blessed for football to bring me to in South America and, you know, here, there, and everywhere in between. And I think what you have to really do is you have to understand not only the specifics of that, the history of that club for that city, but also have to be understand that you have to understand that there's cultural differences too, right? The way that you deal with key stakeholders in Danish culture is totally different than the way things are in England, you know, or the UK, right? And totally different than it is in Ireland, as you know quite well. And then, you know, also in West and East Africa, right? So I think that is something that is, I think, you know, I is a strength of mine, where I feel confident that I'm able to read situations and understand different cultures to be able to work and collaborate together, as you just touched on. The collaboration is the key. It really, really is with that key leadership in each market.
And a huge part of that is obviously the listening and learning piece. But, you know, one of the interesting things for me about being part of an MCO is obviously you can't be everywhere at once, and we spoke off air about this. Obviously, when you're in Houston today, Tuesday, 2 days from now, you're going on a I wouldn't call it a sightseeing trip, but you're certainly checking off as much of the clubs as possible. I mean, what does the day-to-day look like for you? And when you do these trips abroad, Matt, I mean, yeah, just take us through a sample week or two.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly rewarding, but incredibly demanding. For example, later this week, I'll be headed to Africa for 8 days, and then I'll be coming back and connecting through Paris, and I'll stop in England for 3 or 4 days. Go watch some games. Get caught up with work and market there with some of our staff. Then I'll roll that into to going. To Ireland, same thing, be there for 3 or 4 days. And really, that regular visiting, and being present every 6, 8 weeks is really, really important. Because there's definitely a stigma, and you talked about this a little bit about, multi-club ownership group, right? And in particular in England, but all around the world, right? There's a stigma of, oh, there's this, private equity sports investment guys that, they don't know anything about football, and they just want to pop in here and, run our club like, it's a spreadsheet. And that is really, that's something that we're definitely not all about. And I think that that's really, really important that the markets and the clubs and the leadership, they feel that support and they feel that connection. And I always say the first thing that I always focus on anytime, we acquire a new club or we're getting, building, is building relationships, building trust, letting people know that you have their best interests in mind, and I think that's something I pride myself on, that I hope and I believe I bring that level of credibility for our group when we go into these markets, that it's not, we have experts in each space within our executive team. And I think that has helped a lot. And I think my background's helped with that as we've, made these transitions into these markets.
You spoke about presence there being a huge piece. And obviously, as one of the main leaders now responsible for supporting so many verticals across continent, you go on these trips. I mean, what tools do you use, Matt, to, I mean, so that you can perform at your best in terms of, is it reflection, is it pre-flexion, is it something that you do outside of work?
Yeah, I think the big thing that we focus, I think you just have to be consistent. I think the key is being consistent with a, regular meeting cadence, regular check-ins. Something that I really like that we do as a group is, we have a goal tracker, and we have a very from at a group level. For each of our clubs and our entities, I think that Ben does a great job with, helping, all of us with that. And we have this goal tracker of, okay, are we on target? Have we completed this task? Are we lagging? Right. And then, so we're holding each other accountable to that. And I think that, just that regular meeting cadence, getting in market, and getting, again, same thing as when I started this, getting your hands dirty, putting in a lot of heavy lifting, on the ground, and then really just, having these very clear goals and KPIs that you're tracking. And, I think just being consistent, Connor, is the most important thing, especially when you're not there every day. And so I think that's something that's helped us a lot.
And I mean, throughout the podcast, you spoke about your journey from, well, your father, in fact, breaking China cabinets to your playing days to working as a TD, GM, VP, you name it. So it's obviously been a journey of one of continuous growth. So I take it, I mean, the education doesn't stop with yourself. I mean, so what are you doing off the field to best support yourself, or best support yourself and the workforce within Trivella?
Yeah, I think what I'm, doing to support myself, is I think that it's just a big thing for me is once you think you have all the answers, you're not, you're really in the wrong business. And I think that growth mindset of constantly, evolving, growing, learning, having humility to know what you don't know, I think that's super, super important in any leadership role at any club, right? Is understanding what your strengths are, what your weak, what areas you'd like to improve on. I never say weaknesses, but areas you'd like to improve on. And then, okay, how do you evolve yourself? How do you continue to get better and grow, right? Like, at most, 12 plus years, I worked in Major League Soccer. Now I'm working a lot more in Europe, right? And the restrictions of the EFL and the FAI and dealing with tribunals and all these different things that are unique to working in Europe, promotion, relegation, right? I mean, those are things that were new to me. And just, again, having that humility to really continue to grow. I also think, I really do enjoy being a part of the Association of Sporting Directors, where we first met. I'm on the technical committee there, and really learning from different, again, just different executives from different, paths and walks of life from different parts of the world and the challenges they face. And I think that's really helped me as well. And then, I think just really enjoying the journey, and I think, and enjoying figuring out different cultures and how to navigate through different cultures and different markets. So I think that those are some things that I'm always kind of looking to evolve myself in different spaces.
Fantastic. I mean, it does speak volumes to the career trajectory which you've been on today, Matt. But I mean, as we bring the podcast to a close and wrap up, for anyone that's slightly bit inspired by your journey to date and the remarkable path which you've been on, for anyone wishing to thread a similar path, what would be the one bit of key advice you'd have for them?
I would say a bit of key advice is the importance of really, when an opportunity comes, it may not be, perfect at that moment, right? But you have to look at it as, hey, this is one step in my journey. And with having, okay, what's your end goal? Having your end goal, which may change over time, right? But at least, having that flexibility and being adaptable, that when an opportunity comes, it may not be totally perfect. But, go, again, like I've said a couple of times, roll up your sleeves, really, really put in the work, really put in the work, Connor, because I think if you're going to work in pro sports, if anyone's going to work in pro sports or take this path, it has to be more than a job. It really does have to be more than the job, and so I think that once you get your foot in the door and you're starting to figure out what your journey looks like, finding your passion, and then that passion becoming, it has to be more than a job, especially with the demands of this industry. And so I'd say that those are things that I would recommend, as I've kind of looked at my journey and I'm still on that journey, right? And I'm still growing and evolving as well, 25 plus years in, and so I think that's something that I'd recommend.
It'd be fantastic. And what a way to close. I think you brought us on a 360 tour, Matt, from the China cabinets to that piece of advice right at the end. But yeah, I think there's so much gold and valuable insight here for listeners. So Matt Jordan, big thank you for coming on today.
I really appreciate your time, Connor. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to continuing to follow the podcast.